Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, virtual value, real money, the Bitcoin currency in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Let's start by admitting most of us probably don't know what Bitcoin is. Maybe you've heard of it, but few of us really understand it, and fewer agree on what Bitcoin could evolve into. So let's start here. That sounds familiar, right? Handful of pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters. Loose change. Metal alloys pounded into circular shapes that we call currency. There's no argument about what it stands for and its utilitarian value.
E pluribus unum.
You recognize that phrase? Well, pull out the quarter. Grab a dollar bill. Take the 20 out of your wallet or purse. Look for the seal with the eagle on it. That eagle is holding a scroll in its mouth. And look at what's written on that scroll.
E pluribus unum.
It's Latin for out of many, one. The idea is out of all the states of the Union, they are united. In this case, united with one national currency. Imagery and language are important for money. They are important because money is about trust. Trust it will be accepted for the goods and services you want to buy and sell. And trust in its value.
Vires.
In.
Numeris.
While Bitcoin is a digital currency, technically there are no Bitcoins you can jingle in your pocket or stuff in your wallet or purse, some have created actual coins and embedded inside of them the private computer code making them physical representations of the digital Bitcoins. And engraved into those coins?
Vires.
In.
Numeris.
Vires in numeris, Latin for strength in numbers. Just as e pluribus unum, out of many one, sums up the spirit of the American dollar, vires in numeris, strength in numbers, outlines the philosophy of Bitcoin. But really, are we any closer to explaining what Bitcoin is?
Bitcoin is an alternative currency.
Virtual currency.
It's a currency that's not really tied to any kind of bank or government.
It's a worldwide currency.
It is an anonymous form of transaction.
I can't quite describe to you exactly what a Bitcoin looks like or what it's all about.
You know, it's hard to say because it's still kind of confusing.
The easiest way for somebody to think of Bitcoin who is unfamiliar with it is to imagine a box of poker chips.
Essentially as a currency system.
Bitcoin is digital money where you can exchange using keys rather than actual paper money.
It's an internet-wide payment system where any individual from around the world can transfer currencies as well as financial assets into a new financial asset labeled a Bitcoin.
Honestly, the future of the actual money supply, because it's a universal currency.
I understand that it is a mathematical equation. It's an algorithm is what it is.
All right. Do any of those explanations get us any closer to understanding what Bitcoin is? Well, let's try this. One Bitcoin enthusiast compared it to Shimmer. Now, you have to be a student of Saturday Night Live to know what Shimmer is.
New Shimmer is a floor wax.
No, new Shimmer is a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax.
It's a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax, I'm telling you.
It's a dessert topping, you cow!
Hey, calm down, you two. New Shimmer's a floor wax and a dessert topping.
Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, and Gilda Radner back in 1976 on SNL, providing us maybe with the 21st century foreign exchange lesson.
Here, I'll spray some on your mop and some on your butterscotch pudding.
Mmm, tastes terrific.
And just look at that shine. But will it last?
Hey.
Well, it's what you want it to be. In our case, Bitcoin. You want it to be a digital currency? Done. You want it to be a global currency? Done. You want it to be a method of electronic payment across political borders with no contact with the banking system or regulators? Done.
New Shimmer, for the greatest shine you ever tasted.
I rang up Andy Bush. Andy used to be the global currency and public policy strategist for Bank of Montreal. He is now editor of the newsletter, The Bush Update.
Hello, Tom, are you there?
Hey, Andy, it's Tom. How are you?
Good, man. It's good, shaking.
Good to talk to you. How do you explain what Bitcoin is?
Well, it's a virtual currency that can be used for a method of payment, which is pretty interesting. It has gotten a tremendous interest from many people who are trying to find a way around the current payment system, in which many times the banks and other companies that are involved charge 2 to 3%. With Bitcoin, it's a really de minimis amount of what you get charged for it. And even Ben Bernanke has said that there's a potential future for it in that capacity.
Now, Ben Bernanke is the outgoing chairman of the Federal Reserve. That's the government agency responsible for deciding how much American currency is in circulation. Go back to your dollar bill for a moment. It says right on top, Federal Reserve note. So while not endorsing Bitcoin, Chairman Bernanke's acknowledgement of the potential of virtual currencies is important.
As far as trading it as a currency, well, that's a whole nother game. And that's where things get a little bit crazy, as the valuation has fluctuated massively as certain companies have adopted it. And then you have countries like China saying they don't want to use it. They're taking a look at it. They think there's problems with it. So it's a fascinating development as far as a financial product. Its future looks promising, but there are many, many big hurdles to overcome.
Security is one of those concerns, but so is what any currency represents. It's worth.
Value.
Store of value.
Okay, so Bitcoin is like sending an email.
It's a terrible store of value.
Store of value over time.
Store of value.
Value per se.
I think there's even more drawbacks in fiat currency.
It has the potential to be transformative.
But value, right? What's it worth? Back to global currency expert Andy Bush.
There's kind of three uses for a currency, right? I mean, there's the financial use for it, the trading use, in other words, where its value is paired up against another currency. There's the kind of strategic use of it, which I suppose could be best described as the general trend of the value of that currency based upon other global currencies. And then there's the utility of the currency, the usefulness of it for a population to use. Where does Bitcoin fall into that?
Well, I mean, as a store of value, that's a tough one, you know, because that's really important. And that's where the biggest problem, I'd say, for Bitcoin is, even though they say there's a limited amount, they limit the amount of Bitcoin that's out there. It really is a very tricky proposition because, unlike other currencies, it does not have a central authority that can back it up.
There is no Federal Reserve of Bitcoin, at least not how we understand central banks today. There's no Ben Bernanke of Bitcoin. Instead, it uses cryptography to create currency. No one owns the network that generates Bitcoin. It's a network of users. The 2009 white paper, written by a mysterious figure, Satoshi Nakamoto, describes it as, quote, a purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash to allow online payments to be sent directly from one party to another without going through a financial institution, end quote. For plenty of reasons, there's questions that remain about the identity of the author, Satoshi Nakamoto. From the very beginning, though, as you can hear, Bitcoin was designed to facilitate commerce beyond the modern banking system. This same white paper goes on, quote, what is needed is an electronic payment system based on cryptographic proof instead of trust, allowing any two willing parties to transact directly with each other without the need for a trusted third party, end quote. In other words, technology can trump abstract trust. Still to come on this edition of the Sunshine Economy, Bitcoin and the potential here in South Florida.
We have these connections with these other economies around the world. There's a lot that can be done there when you minimize the transaction costs of being able to send money from one country to another.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Bitcoin in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Do you have a pocket full of Bitcoin? As cyberspace as that may sound, let us know. Send us a tweet at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. So Bitcoin is a currency. It exists in computer bytes. It's purely digital. It connects buyer and seller directly. No regulators, no banks. Each of its attributes is certainly an attraction for its users and a concern for others. We called upon a trio of business professors from South Florida universities to talk about the risks and rewards of Bitcoin.
Hello, my name is Charles Evans. I am an instructor of finance at Florida Atlantic University.
My name is Lee Bustamante, and I'm the visiting professor at Florida International University Center for Labor Research and Studies.
My name is Doug Emery. I am
professor of finance at the University of Miami.
How viable is Bitcoin today, and how viable do you think it'll be a year from now, Charles?
At the moment, the market for Bitcoin use is growing at a rather brisk rate. What's going to happen a year from now is unknowable. The future is unknowable, and anybody who speaks with great bombastic authority about the future is trying to sell you something usually. My feeling on this is that it has great promise. And now, for example, with Tiger Direct accepting Bitcoin in exchange for the things that they sell, somebody from Nigeria now could, hypothetically, I don't know if Tiger Direct will ship to Nigeria, maybe they will, but somebody from Nigeria could transfer Bitcoins to Tiger Direct, and the folks at Tiger Direct would then have the Bitcoins.
Why is that an opportunity for this electronic currency that any government-backed currency doesn't have as an opportunity currently?
The government-backed currencies are transferred through the banking system, and the banking system is built on trust and also the ability to reverse transactions. Even bank wires can be reversed. Many people don't realize this. But with credit cards, the buyer has up to 6 months to reverse the transaction, whereas Bitcoin is more like cash, except it's cash that's over the internet, and once you have my Bitcoins, the only way for me to get them back is to ask you very, very politely.
Professor Emery, is this an opportunity for this electronic payment currency, or is this a threat?
Certainly it's an opportunity. I'm very optimistic that in the long run, there will be such a system. I don't know whether this is the one. The analogy I would use is if you go back to the PDAs of the 1990s that didn't work very well, and suddenly Palm Pilot came out with something and it worked. And whether this is the first one that's going to work, that's unknowable.
Professor Bustamante, we have seen this work, and like the Tiger Direct example, we've seen larger companies beginning to accept this form of currency as payment.
Absolutely. We've seen so far, besides Tiger Direct, the next big retailer being Overstock.com, taking Bitcoin as payment. One thing, though, that I feel ultimately undermines this payment system from the side of the vendor is that these corporations aren't necessarily hanging on to the Bitcoins themselves. Once they take it as payment, they instantly transfer it into cash.
Well, one of these things, Professor Evans, is you and I, presumably, I know I do, presumably you do as well, get paid in U.S. currency.
Yes.
Nobody that I know of gets paid as an income, either dividend income or an interest rate income or a wage income in Bitcoin.
There's a software company that famously started paying its employees in Bitcoin sometime in 2013, and Internet Archive, I believe, pays some of its salaries in Bitcoin, some percentage at least. Now, these are novelties, obviously.
Yeah, my question
but,
is getting
but
at...
it's not zero.
My question is... Understood. Okay, noted. My question, though, gets to the fact of kind of fungibility and the usability, the utility of mm-hmm. the currency.
Yes. If you think about it, Bitcoin just celebrated its fifth birthday on January 3rd, and it wasn't really on anybody's radar screen except for some programmers who were playing with the stuff until about maybe 3 years ago. Back in the 1990s during the dot-com boom, we said that internet time was seven times as fast as clock time, and I've been saying for the past 2 years that Bitcoin time is seven times as fast as internet time. We would not have been able to have this conversation a year ago. It has the potential to be transformative, but I'm not going to quite wax cultish yet.
Professor Emery, is this the opportunity for the unbanked world, not the developed world that you and I and most people listening to this program live in, but the unbanked world, the majority of the world that lives and works in an economy that doesn't necessarily rely on banks as financial intermediaries?
I think it's a possibility. In all of these things, the innovations are driven by a need, and there's something, some use. In this case, Bitcoin can be driven by efficiency. It can be driven by the ability to make transactions that it didn't make, couldn't make in other ways, or you more costly in other ways. If it catches on, that's what's doing it. So in some sense, it's a lot like the illegal activity is more difficult. It's easier with Bitcoin, so it facilitates. And in some sense, you can think of it in the same way the internet developed because of either illegal or socially unacceptable or frowned upon activity was what drove the demand for it. Once it's established, that allows us to have a system that is useful for many other things we hadn't necessarily thought of, or you couldn't get those that market going based on that because it was too small.
Yeah. With regards to the sorts of transactions that we cannot imagine at the moment, think back to the 1950s with television. Go look at the old Honeymooners TV show. It was a stage production with one camera pointing at the stage. Then they moved to two cameras, and then they moved to filming on location, and then CGI and all the other stuff. So we're in the 1950s television stage of Bitcoin at the moment.
And I want to talk more about the security concerns, the black market concerns. And in fact, there has been a Securities and Exchange Commission criminal case filed in Texas in a Ponzi case based upon Bitcoin. So we have seen some of these things begin to enter into the American judicial system.
If I may. But the fascinating thing about this is we've already seen, I think it's three major criminal outfits taken down already. This thing's only about 3 years old.
And include the FBI operating on that Silk Road exchange.
Right. So if somebody says, oh, it's great for criminal activity, it's like, no, we've already seen that three big ones were already taken down in no time flat.
Of course, the question, though, is how many have been missed?
Well, okay, fine.
Professor Bustamante, I do want to get back to this question, though, about the use of Bitcoin. My question in regards to getting paid in a currency gets to the utilitarian nature of currency, of being able to use it for the exchange of goods. Bitcoin is certainly being used more and more for the exchange of goods and services, both tangible and intangible. However, it seems that it's still really thought of as a financial asset, a financial instrument, not a store of value like a normal regular run-of-the-mill government-issued currency would be, like the American dollar or the peso or the euro.
BitPay currently has, I think, over 10,000 vendors who currently accept Bitcoin as a form of payment. One thing that we know is that we know the scale of purchases isn't very large at this point. A lot of it has to do with the fact that although it is a online currency, it's not necessarily being used significantly as an online currency because it's because of its high fluctuations in value. To this point, we don't know really who's using it, who really is using Bitcoin. But as far as one of the things that we do know is that when it comes to the unbanked, when it comes to the ideal mission of Bitcoin to actually create free exchanges, we know that it's disproportionately going to people with capacity, people with means. When we think of the unbanked, when we think of the underbanked, for example, we know the descent to be significantly lower income people, oftentimes immigrants or with low education. Mm-hmm. It's a huge hurdle to actually cross to actually be able to access Bitcoin. So there's a big access issue in terms of whether this can ever be actually taken upon at a grand scale.
Charles, it makes a good point. Professor Bustamante does. The unbanked traditionally are lower income immigrants with low skills necessarily, and quite frankly, not a high speed connection to the internet where Bitcoin lives and breathes.
Yes, but there's a lot of them.
A lot of Bitcoins or a lot of those types
both,
of
but a lot of people who do not have much wealth. I mean, that's the whole what the whole Occupy Wall Street movement was all about. No, we haven't yet signed up everybody in sub-Saharan Africa. Give me another year. I'm working on it. And so that part is true. Now, whether we're talking about people who pull tomatoes in Homestead for a living, whether they're going to be using Bitcoin or not, I don't know. But I do know that we have a substantial number of people here in South Florida who are using Bitcoin to send remittances back to their family members in Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil because they have currency controls.
This brings up an interesting point here, Professor Emery, is the currency issue. I mean, we just saw in the last week, of course, some huge swings in the Argentinian currency because of actions or inactions, I guess, as the case may be, but on the part of its central bank. Venezuela inflation is well known, certainly in South Florida, with shipments of toilet paper and toothpaste being sent from Weston to Caracas on a regular basis. Could you imagine sovereign solutions coming up from a Bitcoin strategy?
From one level, I can imagine it in a some sense. I think there are tremendous things to overcome, including the idea of what the government themselves will do, how they will handle it. We've had countries that have dollarized, and they've done that because they couldn't control their own politicians.
So essentially, they've attached their foreign currency to a value of the dollar and said, that's that.
That's right. And that idea, the problem you have is who do you trust? And in the end, I think there are several issues to solve here. One of the issues is the organization that's underlying this can be an open source organization, and there are many positives about that. But ultimately, if there's a problem, they can change the rules. The reason we have a Fed is somebody has to be in charge of that. Somebody has to manage
the Federal Reserve.
The Federal Reserve is in charge of that, and somebody has to manage that.
Is there something that's unique about this geography, about this ecosystem, the commerce that's done here that that has grabbed the attention for the Bitcoin community?
The one thing that is particularly unique to South Florida is this idea that we are a hub for an international hub. We are incredibly interconnected with Latin America as well as the rest of the world. For Miami, particularly, right? One of our main trade partners is Switzerland. Another one
thanks
is Colombia.
To the gold trade, though.
Absolutely.
It's not like we're you know shipping a lot of Florida avocados to Basel.
Absolutely, but even with that said, we have these connections with these other economies around the world. So there's a lot that can be done there when you minimize transaction costs of being able to send money from one country to another. Again, the remittances, another clear place where we have a competitive advantage of sorts where we can really innovate with Bitcoin.
Ali Bustamante with FIU, Charles Evans with FAU, and Doug Emery from the University of Miami Business Schools. Now, I asked all three what they would rather own today. I put in front of them, not literally, but as a thought experiment, a $100 bill, $100 worth of gold, or $100 worth of Bitcoin. What did they pick? Well, you can hear the answers. Go to our web chat right now at WLRN.org, and you can find that audio. Also, while you're online, tweet us at WLRN. Answer the question, who do you trust with your money? The U.S. Federal Reserve, another national government, or Bitcoin? Again, at Twitter, at WLRN, use the hashtag SunshineEconomy. Still to come, the confidence in Bitcoin for commerce here in South Florida.
We know its potential. We believe in its potential. And just like the value of dollar, it came out of a sense of belief. People all felt and went and followed on the same currency, and that's where we are today.
This is the Sunshine Economy, virtual value, real money, the Bitcoin currency in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. If you have a 45 to 50 foot catamaran sailboat for sale, Antonio Maldonado and Jessica Londano want to talk with you. They run the Advantaged Yacht Center and Sales at Sunset Harbor on Miami Beach. They have a customer from Turkey who's looking to spend a little more than $250,000 on a sailboat. $250,000 in Bitcoin.
We have a client. We have accepted. He's putting his money in Bitcoin escrow, basically. And then he is searching now to find the correct boat for him, just in order to secure the client is legit.
If they are successful in finding the right boat for the customer, it won't be the company's first Bitcoin transaction. Over this past weekend, it chartered one of its 28 vessels it rents for $2,500 in Bitcoin. Some people like to use Bitcoin because it's easy. A small group of merchants like the Advantaged Yacht Charters and Sales are beginning to see benefits of accepting the currency. WLRN intern Hillary Lindwald reports companies are catching on because Bitcoin can help them avoid credit processing fees.
I went to Latin House Burger and Taco Bar in South Miami for a Bitcoin user meetup. I wanted to see how useful Bitcoin really could be. It's as simple as scanning a QR code with your smartphone. A QR code is that black and white square that your phone can scan and read. This is the sound of a Bitcoin transaction, and you have to listen closely to hear how a buyer uses Bitcoin. That's it. That's a Bitcoin transaction. It's a scan of a code and a confirmation that funds were transferred. No cash register, no receipts to sign. Bitcoin is a digital currency. It's an exchange of funds between peers. Some people, like Mo Levin, use it because it's simple.
Some people for a political statement, some people because it's easy. I use it, yeah, it really is easy. I prefer using something where I can give them the exact amount.
A few business owners are beginning to see the value in accepting Bitcoin. Michelle Sanchez is the chef and owner of Latin House Burger and Taco Bar. He says accepting Bitcoin has helped him dodge the cost of accepting credit cards.
We wanted to accept it. We wanted to save on fees, make sure that we couldn't get any chargebacks, which you get with credit cards. And we wanted to go overall and be able to bring that to the mainstream.
As of the night I visited with Sanchez, The restaurant had done 72 transactions with Bitcoin since first allowing customers to pay with it. In addition to the lower cost of using Bitcoin when compared to credit cards, Sanchez also thinks it's more secure for his business.
If I give you a service, my food, and you eat it and you enjoy it, you're going to pay for it. And you pay it in Bitcoin, then we keep it. It's ours. But if you pay for it with your credit card, you can say, go back to your credit card and say, I didn't really have a good time there. And by saying that, then they can actually take the money back from my account. So it's a much safer transaction as a merchant, and it protects us in the long run.
According to the website coinmap.org, a global locator for businesses that take Bitcoins, fewer than 36 businesses currently accept Bitcoin around South Florida. I'm Hillary Lindwall in Miami.
In Palm Beach County, John Varvarigos is the third generation of his family to be in the flower business. He runs Wellington Florist in the town of the same name. He hasn't done any business in Bitcoin yet, but he hopes to.
Why not? I mean, it's one thing that's going to make Bitcoin more popular and more successful is if more merchants accept it. You know, the utility is what gives it the value. You know, so as more and more merchants accept it, people are going to say, hey, what's this Bitcoin? They see the little payment logo on the website and they'll be able to, you know, they'll look into it.
From boats to roses, from Palm Beach County to Miami Beach, like many of the early adapters accepting Bitcoin, they also speculate with the currency itself. Varvarigos of Wellington Florist cashed out of most of the Bitcoins he owned late last year, converting his profits into gift cards for the holidays.
So my name is Kenneth Mitral from CoinGig.com.
Ken Mitral is an FIU alum who founded CoinGig in his South Dade home less than a year ago. He hopes it becomes like eBay, except using only Bitcoin as the currency between buyers and sellers. That means his website acts as a third party, ensuring the Bitcoins used by the buyer are legit, but also make sure that the merchandise gets to the buyer.
Well, usually Bitcoins are very hard to duplicate and you can't double spend, but sellers do tend to send fake products or products that the buyer didn't order.
So your problem is on the product side, not on the currency side.
Exactly, yes. So these guys, these scammers out there, they've gotten smarter. They know that they can't duplicate or they can't use Bitcoin in a malicious way, but instead of using By currency, they try doing it by the actual product or the item they're trying to sell.
Mitral claims his website, CoinGig.com, is growing strong from $800 in Bitcoin transactions 4 months ago to $80,000 a month now. And he says he and his partner have made back their initial startup costs, and the website is profitable, although the partners are not yet drawing a salary. Yet.
For every transaction that occurs, we have a 5% fee. So for every transaction that occurs, we not only take the fee, but we also are risking ourselves because we hold the buyer's Bitcoins in our wallets.
That's pretty good. That's about twice what MasterCard or Visa charge.
Yes, it's true. But if you compare us to eBay and Amazon, they charge between 10 and 15% per fee. And plus, you know, if you add PayPal fees and bank fees, it's a lot more than that.
Back on Miami Beach at Sunset Harbor, Antonio Maldonado and Jessica Londano at the Advantaged Yacht Charters and Sales say one reason they began accepting Bitcoin was to attract Bitcoin investors who have profited as the currency has shot up from $200 just last fall to about $1,000 today.
Once you do any transaction, you have currency, now you have a wallet, and you're letting that your coins, as you call it, quote-unquote, sit, you give it some time, and that currency is actually going to go up. So that's the plus in doing what we're doing.
But it could go down, too.
Everything has a gain and a loss. Yes, it has its days like the market. It's Wall Street. But the potential is strongly there.
Gold goes up every day or goes down. So, I mean, that's really what we're going to think Bitcoin is.
Do you accept gold as currency from a client?
I have no problem accepting gold.
Gold is still a solid value in currency anywhere in the world. So, yes, the answer is yes.
Would you prefer gold over Bitcoin?
Because, great question. Let me answer this one in the best way I can. Gold, because it has the history and recognition, it is accepted worldwide without a second thought. Bitcoin, because it's a new form of currency, it's still not fully introduced all over the world. Therefore, there is that hesitation, the unfamiliar with, the unknown. Give it some time. I think that Bitcoin has the possibility of going as far as gold is today.
I accept Bitcoin over gold any day. I know Bitcoin will, once it's gaining in popularity, once other countries are going to start accepting, once banks are going to start, it's going to go higher and higher. There's only so much Bitcoin, and there's plenty gold. We keep mining for more gold, but there are only so many Bitcoins out there. So that's why it's getting harder and harder.
Gold has been used for a global currency for millennia.
Yes.
Bitcoin for less than a decade. Mm-hmm. Gold is accepted across the globe as a currency, as an exchange for goods and services, and for industrial purposes. Bitcoin exists in cyberspace in the virtual world, not backed by a federal government, solely backed by the trust that you're placing in programmers to mine, mm-hmm. computer-driven mining, only a certain amount. You express an incredible amount of faith in this really unproven currency. What gives you that kind of confidence?
I think the reason why it gives me confidence is it's going to start uniting people. You know, the internet, yes, it's young. Look at what happened with cyberspace and technology and the internet. I mean, look how far we've gotten that we can't even leave without our phones. And that's still within 15, 20 years.
It's one currency worldwide, which a lot will fight in the beginning of the years. But I think that because we've noticed 2008 was a great example that the world is connected financially. One country hits, the world is also hurting. So in the sense of Bitcoin, imagine one currency for all. And I think that's the great value of it.
If you're successful with this transaction involving the foreign buyer of a boat and they purchase in Bitcoin, will you keep it in Bitcoin or translate that into another currency?
We actually had this conversation yesterday about, you know, our accountant wants us to completely cash out, and he and I have decided that we will cash out in order to pay everyone, and then we will hold whatever profits and keep that in coin, because that will gain more value than the cash itself.
This transaction, if it is consummated, is being done beyond the banking system. So in other words, how can you operate as a legit businessman without concern about the source of the funds of those Bitcoin? There's been instances, of course, of illicit activity involved with Bitcoin currency. How concerned are you about this transaction and the source of this buyer's funds in Bitcoin that came from legitimate activities versus something else?
That's an interesting question. I mean, we can say that a lot of Miami can say, where did that money come from? In the 80s, most of that money was not made within the United government's, you know, standard of living. So, you know, at what point do we say we need to start taking down buildings because, you know, it was the year the 80s built it?
If the exchange was something that's going to be a harmful transaction of that nature, but I'm not going to look at every person that comes through a Bitcoin because it's not being introduced to the general market. It's a negative impact. We're here to do a transaction. We're here to sell a product. And our job is simply just that, to do it the right way, the legit way. And the legit way is, if you have it in Bitcoin, once it's there, it's a currency exchange, just like a wire transfer being sent to me from Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela. What the person's history is, I don't know. We run a store. Our store is to sell a product. And then from that product, we make sure that the client gets it in good hands. That's our job.
We wouldn't background check someone because they just paid us in a credit card from Amex. I mean, that's not fair to go ahead and say you're paying with Bitcoin. We're going to, you know, we're not going to discriminate you because you're paying a different source of money.
When you have a client that knocks on your door with an interest of buying a product that you are selling, that's it. That's as far as you go. Anything aside from that, you have the federal government to go and check where the currency is coming from. And some way, somehow, they will get involved like it always do.
Antonio Maldonado and Jessica Londano with the Advantaged Yacht Charters and Sales at Sunset Harbor in Miami Beach. Now, remember, their Bitcoin-paying boat buyer is Turkish. It's worth noting the Turkish currency, the Turkish lira, has sunk to a multi-year low against the dollar, a lack of value, forcing, in fact, this week, the Turkish Central Bank to intervene in the currency markets, hoping to stop that currency drop. Still to come here on the Sunshine Economy, virtual value, real money, the Bitcoin currency in South Florida. Where are the banks on Bitcoin? This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. We're talking about Bitcoin. Who do you trust with your money? Let us know at WLRN on Twitter. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Just about everything we do with money can be traced eventually. Our credit and debit cards leave electronic trails. Arguably, every bill in our pockets has a serial number on it.
The list of financial watchdogs in America is long. There's the Federal Reserve, the FDIC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and every state has its own banking authority. Here in Florida, it's appropriately called the Florida Office of Financial Regulation. Gabriel Caballero is an attorney with the law firm Gunster, where he's involved with that firm's banking and financial services practice. He's a former associate general counsel of Banco Santander International. That's a unit of the Spanish banking giant. Gabriel, welcome to the Sunshine Economy. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
How are banks treating Bitcoin? As a curiosity, or as a potential, or as a threat?
It's all of the above. Banks are looking at Bitcoin as, first of all, a potential risk from a regulatory standpoint. In the short term, banks are looking at banking some of these Bitcoin-based businesses. However, because of the regulatory uncertainty regarding the use of Bitcoin, there's substantial risk for the banks in doing that.
How are there's the way I understand it, there's no regulatory concerns about the use of Bitcoin. The question is, who's regulating it? Is there a regulator? Ought there be a regulation toward it?
Well, that's part of the discussion that is taking place now.
Yeah.
Many federal regulators, the CFTC, the Securities and Exchange
Commodity
Commission.
Commodity Futures Trading Commission, Securities and Exchange Commission. They're involved with futures for oil and gasoline and stocks.
Correct. They've kind of thrown their hat in the ring. But the first federal regulator that's really come out with formal written guidance is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is essentially the financial intelligence unit of the U.S. And what FinCEN has said is that those that they consider Bitcoin a virtual currency, and those that transmit virtual currencies like Bitcoin from one location to another, from one party to another, are money transmitters. And that triggers a set of licensing and registration requirements at the federal level. And depending on state law, it could trigger other licensing and registration requirements at the state level as well.
I want to ask you about this from the banking perspective. You've worked inside a large multinational bank, and you clearly have banking clients now in private practice. A number of the folks that we've spoken to on this program have cited the efficiency of electronic payments as a real asset for Bitcoin. Not that it necessarily exists beyond the banking system as we know it, although that's clear, but there aren't the fees associated to doing a transaction in Bitcoin as there are in doing a transaction with a traditional credit card or a debit card or even a wire transfer. Is that a threat for banks?
It is a threat, but it's also an opportunity.
How so?
Well, first and foremost, it could be a potential replacement for a more efficient payment system. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot of things to be worked out. Some very large financial institutions have begun exploring developing their own proprietary digital currencies. So whether it's Bitcoin or some other type of replacement, whether it be proprietary or not, we could see digital currency coming into a more efficient payment system.
So how would the United Bank of Alpha has its own currency, the Alpha dollar, and the United Bank of Beta has its Beta coin. How do those two get reconciled if Alpha Bank customers are banking in Alpha dollars and Beta Bank customers are banking in Beta coins?
It's part of the settlement system that is yet to be developed in connection with Bitcoin and other digital currencies. That may be an opportunity for the U.S. financial system. It may be an opportunity for other clearinghouses or organization or groups. But that's something that is yet to exist.
What's behind this effort for banks to issue their own currency, digital or otherwise? I mean, we've heard from Bitcoin enthusiasts. There's a bit of libertarian streak in sometimes what they do. There's a bit of curiosity in their interest in Bitcoin. But for a multinational bank to develop its currency, what's the upside?
I think ultimately it comes down to market share and the concept of first mover's advantage. If you are the first to break into a new market, a new product, and gain substantial market share, you can establish a very strong footprint in that area. So that's why it is potentially attractive, although it has substantial risks.
Are we seeing the monopoly on the part of national governments and currency begin to fracture?
I wouldn't go that far. I would say that international governments, the U.S. included, have taken note of Bitcoin and digital currencies. And there are even some that have contemplated minting their own form of digital currency. Canada, for example, has explored the possibility of creating a something called the mint chip, which is a form of digital currency backed with the full faith and credit of the Canadian government.
That would be a digital currency that is essentially issued by a central bank.
Correct.
That would be a novelty in this push toward digital and virtual currency, something we haven't seen before, right?
Correct.
We are talking with Gabriel Caballero, attorney with the law firm Gunster, dealing with banks and Bitcoin, also a former associate general counsel of Banco Santander International. Gabriel, what about lending in regards to Bitcoin? Are you seeing any kind of loan market developing in regards to this virtual currency?
I personally have not. The potential is there, but with any lending type of market, you're usually talking about some type of collateral-based lending. In order to have collateral-based lending, you have to be able to store the collateral in some function and be able to protect your security interest in that collateral. So again, there are many things that are being developed, and some of these concepts in terms of virtual wallets, places where you can hold these bitcoins where a lender can possibly exercise control, that's where you may see some of the lending come into play.
Do you get a sense, though, that the Bitcoin community and the digital currency community overall is interested in bringing its currency transactions inside the banking system to allow it to be a fractured system to allow for the kind of lending growth and opportunities that that kind of regulation would allow?
I think there is disagreement amongst the industry itself. Is again, you kind of alluded to some of the a little bit of the libertarian movement.
Right.
I don't think that part of the industry would like that integration. However, you have a industry that has been developed in terms of miners, exchangers. There's also, you know, e-commerce based types of companies that are accepting Bitcoin. I think they're welcoming regulation to some extent, thoughtful regulation, in order to bring legitimacy to this potential digital currency.
Do you own any Bitcoin? You ever used it?
I don't own any Bitcoin, and that's not for any particular reason other than I'm not smart enough to predict the performance of the financial markets.
You're instead talking about the legal ramifications for it. Gabriel Caballero speaking with us, attorney from the law firm Gunster, former associate general counsel of Banco Santander International. This is the Sunshine Economy, virtual value, real money, the Bitcoin currency in South Florida. Still to come, the technology versus the economy of Bitcoin. This is the Sunshine Economy, virtual value, real money, the Bitcoin currency in South Florida. Who do you trust with your currency? Do you trust a computer behind your currency or the federal government, the Federal Reserve? Let us know on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Lance Dixon is a reporter with the Miami Herald. He joins us here on the program. Lance, there was a kind of a first of its kind Bitcoin conference here in South Florida over the weekend. What were some of the themes that came out of that conference?
Well, Tom, I'd say some of the major themes of the conference were that there was a big focus on startups and about people trying to create their own capital, in a sense, through Bitcoin and through entrepreneurship. And there was also a big discussion on alternative coins or altcoins, and some of the most popular ones are Litecoin, which a couple of different wallet services and other companies are accepting, and also another one that sort of evolved out of poking fun at Bitcoin in a sense through the internet, Dogecoin, but it's actually gained a little bit of headway and some support. And then there's another one out there that was developed by this 19-year-old who's smarter than probably all of us called Ethereum, which says it wants to be an even more customizable version of Bitcoin. So there's a lot of support not only for the main sort of player here, Bitcoin, but for these other ones as well.
Underlying all of these is some, as you mentioned, some real brain power, but also some real technological heft. And that's one part of the Bitcoin story and the alternative currency, digital currency story that I think gets lost in the conversation about the potential or the threat of these currencies for any national currency. Is the real strength of technology behind these?
I'd say so. I think that there's enough people inside of the sort of underworkings and behind the scenes that want to make it more secure as it gains in popularity. I mean, I know one of the major companies that was represented there is a company called Blockchain, which helps people handle their digital wallets, their Bitcoin wallets, and helps educate people about it. And And something about that company is they've recently hired a lot of people to work behind the scenes to sort of amplify that.
Yeah, you spoke with Allison Margaret, an employee of the company. And this is a the blockchain. It provides people with Bitcoin wallets, digital wallets to hold this digital currency, and also helps educate people who want to invest in the currency.
We are a 100% Bitcoin company. We're 100% behind the currency, and we see a huge future for it. So that's why we're paid in it. For us, it's a benefit when any businesses want to accept Bitcoin, because then we can use our Bitcoin day to day.
So, you know, a company that believes in it so much, they pay their employees in it. But for those employees to live day to day, they still can't necessarily go to the grocery store. They can't pay for gasoline in Bitcoin. They still have to translate that into the utilitarian currency, in this case, the U.S. dollar.
Right. And Allison mentioned that to me as well, that even though they're paid entirely in Bitcoin, it's still, for the time being, tied to the U.S. dollar in the sense that they still have to, as you said, you know, get gas and do things where Bitcoin isn't accepted just yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the regulatory hurdles we spoke about. There is the acceptance hurdle, and perhaps that's the highest one here, is the ability of an economy to accept this currency as transactional. In other words, Lance, you want to buy something from me, I'm willing to accept your Bitcoin because I agree, we agree on the value of that Bitcoin, that it's worth something, even though it's not backed by anything, right? I mean, that's perhaps the big economic hurdle here for not only Bitcoin, but any virtual currency.
Right, because even if someone understands Bitcoin to a certain extent, you start getting into all other ones and it gets even more complex. And I think most of the people who spoke at the conference noted that education is such a big part of this. When we can get past the point where Bitcoin is mentioned in the same sentence as Silk Road every time.
Right. Silk Road being the marketplace the FBI came in and busted because it was black market using Bitcoin well beyond the banking system.
Right. And even people on the legal side have said the same thing, that those people who were implicated in these cases, it was because they were doing things illegally. It just happened to be with Bitcoin. So I think that once it can move past that stigma and people understand that you don't necessarily need to know how to mine or dig into the tech side of it as much, you can still sort of understand it and use it.
There are those that are all in. Mac from North Carolina has gone all the way to Bitcoin.
I sold everything I had for Bitcoin 2 years ago now, except my car and my computer. And it worked out really well for me so far at this point.
Because the value of those Bitcoins is up. But boy, I mean, he may have some risk ahead.
Yeah, I mean, because of the volatility that so many people have spoken about. But for the time being, he's doing pretty well. He actually told me that with the money that he's been able to build up at this point, he wants to invest in 3D printing and sort of start his own business through that. So, I mean, the early adopters are grinning right now because
Sure. They're,
you know, they're saying that, you know, we were ahead of the game on this and now we're sitting on all this cash, essentially.
A year ago, Bitcoins were trading for dozens of dollars. Today, they're about $1,000.
Right, right. So Mac is just one of many who is continuing to sort of preach the gospel of this. And as people sort of move into it further, I think that the main thing they have to do is just continue to read up on it and really in a substantive way to understand what they're getting themselves into.
Evolving quickly. And Lance Dixon is watching it for the Miami Herald. Lance, thanks for joining us here on the Sunshine Economy.
Thanks
money,
for having me.
Money is a reflection of society. It represents what we collectively agree it represents. Stones, seashells, livestock, food have all been used as global currency. Sure, they're banking authorities today, but no practice of strict currency controls have succeeded around the world. None have stood the test of time. Regardless of the form of payment, the bedrock of commerce still rests on trust. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
Trust in me in all you do.